I want to speak with you this morning about incarnation and the soul purpose that each of us carries. Each of us desires, each human being desires, in the course of a life to know what we're doing here. Everyone asks that question either in words or not in words. The meaning of a life is something we explore. It's why we're in existence at all. So I wanted to tell you a few things about incarnating and how decisions get made about what the shape of a life will be, so you can feel your own relationship to what I'm saying. There is a time and place where each soul feels called to take a more active part in learning more about embodied life. Once a soul has entered the Earth's evolutionary cycle, then the process of learning that takes place on the embodied level, through being in a body, continues on the embodied level, with the purpose of bringing more and more and more of divine consciousness into the body, into your human life. So there's a time after the interlude between one lifetime and another when the soul feels called inwardly from within to again enter the learning process of being an embodied human being. And that calling comes from a sense that it's time, and also with the knowledge that there's something to be learned or healed that has more priority than something else of greater importance at a particular time. Each lifetime is constructed in its own unique way, and yet all hang together, all hold the aspect of revealing to the embodied self who we are and what we're doing here. All of them hold together as different aspects of the same purpose. So it is decided from that place of feeling drawn to learn something. What are the best conditions of learning? Where to go? Where to be in the sense of who to be with? Often what location? What part of the earth, what time, what time frame. All of that's related to the decision about taking another embodiment. But the part that I wanted to talk to you about more significantly today is that souls, as they grow, come not only to learn for themselves, but to help all of humanity. And that's not true in the same proportion for every individual soul. The capacity and the desire to take a lifetime that will be in service grows as the soul grows in understanding its connection with all. And so the proportion of having a life in which mostly learning and healing is going on and mostly service is going on, that is different for different individuals. The readiness to be taking a lifetime primarily of service is part of maturing. And there are all stages in between, learning and service. It's not either or. Often what happens is that these two goals of an embodiment are combined so that the specific limitations or circumstances that a soul takes on in embodied life fit both needs, the needs of learning and healing and the needs of service. When we look at that on the human level, it's very hard to see how this works, because in our observational view, we look at a life in terms of human value judgments. For instance, if someone has a life that's primarily concerned with their family, immediate family, and with the media community, but there's no big exploration of some business or political life or obvious path of larger service. In our human frame of reference, we think of that as smaller because it's confined in terms of what it looks like to us as a path of service. We say that person, for instance, has been mostly at home or with their family or raising children and so on. That's entirely from a human perspective. We look at things in terms of large and small. From a divine perspective, one looks at things in terms of vibration, not in terms of size. That is, what is the vibration and what's the vibrational intensity of what's being conveyed through a particular lifetime? For example, a person who has a devotion to their family, kin, friends, community, may be expressing in that way, in that circumscribed and geographical way, something that embodies a very strong aspect of devotion and love. Devotion and love. Now, that wouldn't mean that everybody who's involved in community service would have the same vibration, but it does mean that the arena of service is not defined by the size of the service. Not necessarily. That the vibration is as important, often, as anything else. That's why we hear tell of ancient ones who have been, who have come to the earth primarily for service. When I say ancient ones, I'm talking primarily of the history in the East of sages and recluses who have lived very isolated lives, very much out of human contact, but whose path vibrationally has been devoted to service to the entire planet. So the fact that somebody was alone, either in a hermit, or as a prophet, or as a master or sage sitting in on a mountain or in a cave, that is a context physically, but vibrationally, the spiritual purpose of that life was planetary. So the first thing I want to convey is that one can't judge the level of service by the size of what it looks like is happening outwardly. The second thing is that souls, as they grow, as we grow, can take on a path of service that looks very much like a path of limitation. We can take on a path of service in which great hardship occurs. And there have been, and we do this not just for our own learning, say, for example, about trust, how to trust more in the presence of hardship, how to have faith in the presence of hardship. Souls do that for their own learning. But also, and not either or, but also, a soul can take on a path of hardship in order to create a pathway for others, a visible pathway for others. And we have seen historically individuals on the world stage who have done that for others, who have been examples of leadership and way-showers who, in their own personal life, experienced great limitation. Examples in this country are very clear because the area of sacrifice of one's life, that is through assassination of Martin Luther King or through John Kennedy, that is an area of severe limitation of cutting off a life. And yet, the degree of service, that life was taken on in service. And so that purpose for which that whole historical context occurred was both personal and planetary in the case of those two beings. Then you take someone like Nelson Mandela, who has been an inspiration for many, many people of how to endure through great confinement over a long period of time. So one can say about that, that he as a soul took that on for his own learning, which we can't evaluate because it's not on a human level. But on the planetary level, we can say this being did a great deal by representing the triumph of faith over adversity and of freedom of the spirit over confinement. This one being was an example of that, that lit the way for many. There are others besides those individual examples who, for example, incarnate into locations, say, in poverty-stricken nations in Africa, who, again, both for their own learning and soul's choice, and also to be of assistance to many, incarnate into hardship situations of poverty and deprivation in order to carry light there. It's done deliberately, by choice, on the soul level, and one engages in the hardship. It's not that one is immune from the hardship. And it's not that all souls are simultaneously involved in the same act of service. No, there's always the individual choice in terms of what the proportion is between learning, healing, and service. But souls do take on great sacrifice and hardship in order to serve many, to be a light for many. On the human level, when we perceive sacrifice of a life, we look at it with distress. And I'm talking now about a violent end to a life. We look at it, as we well should, with horror, if somebody takes another person's life, or some of the atrocities that are so opposite to what our inner humanity tells us is reasonable. We look at it with great horror and distress, and that's the natural response. And at the same time, not all, but some souls have chosen to undergo sacrifice in order to be an example of something. So we have to be aware of this in our understanding of how souls choose to be in hardship. You can look at your own life for any relevance, any resonance that might be stirred by what I'm saying. That a soul can choose a life of hardship in order to bring light and hope and faith to a particular location. A soul like the young girl who was shot in Pakistan, Malala, can choose that particular circumstance in order to become a symbol for young girls everywhere in India, Pakistan, and now worldwide, of the need to empower themselves through her own triumph over adversity. Her own triumph over adversity, and since that time, she's been teaching young women everywhere about education, not teaching as much as representing the importance for girls everywhere to pursue their own education. So that sacrifice of being shot, one looks at that as something that should not happen from the human level, and that it was painful and awful to go through, and it was. And at the same time, the service has been great. And they're both true. They're both true. The service has been great. The degree to which countries have become awakened to the further movement of young women desiring their own education has increased. Maybe not as much as we would like, but it has increased. And she has been a representative of that. There are souls whose love is so great because of their understanding of their oneness with the divine and their desire to bring that consciousness to humanity, that great sacrifice is taken on behalf of all. And that great sacrifice may not be interpreted as such by anyone who sees the actual events that are going on. It wouldn't even be perceived by the person going through it. It would only be perceived from the divine level that the sacrifice is taken on out of great love in order to provide a pathway through adversity. The pathway can be, as I said, about souls, Malala being one, pathway through adversity being the way of empowering young women to redefine what their roles are in the Middle East. And in the case of people incarnating in situations of poverty in Africa, the way of enduring and remaining spiritually uplifted in the presence of poverty. There are souls who incarnate in conditions of extreme poverty in order to serve in that way. And then there are souls also who take on vibrations of energy in order to create a pathway through energies of darkness, a pathway that will create light through the darkness. This isn't a geographical sacrifice as much as an energetic sacrifice, but it's the same sacrifice with the same principle involved. That energies that are oppositional to love and light, that affect human beings and that affect the planet, are difficult and create a sense of loss of the valuing of the divine, loss of the sacred, loss of the heart. And so souls can equally take on energetic difficulties, emotional difficulties, as a sacrifice in order to create a way for others that will be easier to pass through, a way that will uplift others, a way that will make life better for the planet. When we look at a human life, we tend to use the words about happy and not happy as the defining aspect of life at a certain level of our own growth. And when the soul grows in maturity, the words change. It's not that happy is irrelevant, it's that love and meaning are more important. Because happy is related to the self, and love and meaning include the self, but are related to all. And so as love grows in the inner being, as the soul comes forward more, then the desire to have a meaningful life that's of love and that's of benefit to all grows simultaneously in proportion to soul awareness grows. The desire to have a life that's meaningful to all grows. And people, we as human beings, are all along the way in that spectrum of where we are between feeling that our life is our own life, my life, your life, and feeling that our life is our life. It's not longer my life, it's our collective life. Because it never wasn't our collective life, but the history of what we've lived through has made it seem like each person has their own life. It's never been true. We don't own our life. It's never been that way. But it's our experience because we exist in what looks like separate bodies that we think we have our own life. So as the soul matures within the body, then it becomes oriented towards the deeper truth, which is it's our life collectively, and then there's no such thing as serving the happiness of the self versus the impoverishment of everyone else. That doesn't exist as a possibility. There's no everyone else. There's only one. And so then the desire to serve all, as well as the capacity to serve all, both grow simultaneously because that consciousness of love and oneness is the foundation for both. Love and oneness creates the understanding that we are one, And therefore, what I do, there's no myself to do anything for. There's only us to do something for, including myself. Not excluding, but including. The beauty and the mystery and the wonder of all of this is that it's real. That souls actually can make these choices, and that the freedom of the soul to choose is complete. A soul can choose, a soul cannot choose not to grow, but a soul can choose the time and place and circumstances of what will be. You can't choose to go backwards in history in your own evolution. It doesn't work that way, because the divine principle of creation is that all is growing, all is moving into greater wholeness. You can have a lifetime in which lots of mistakes are made, but then that lifetime will need to be corrected so that those mistakes turn into something else. You can't go backwards into a lower state of consciousness, even if your present lifetime reflects a lower state of consciousness. That lower state will be temporary and will be absorbed into the principle of growth. And souls that choose to act out of a lower state of consciousness, selfishness, lack of love for others, inhumane treatment, may go for a long time in that direction. A long time, very long time. But ultimately, that will be turned around. Because inside of every person who's lost their way is still a soul. And the principle of growth of the soul still applies. Inside of every person is still a soul. What I wanted to convey to you primarily is that as you grow as a soul, identification with the needs of all grows with you, the capacity to love grows with you, and out of those capacities and identification come the choices you make about how to enter life through incarnating in a body. It doesn't mean that you would choose a body that's well, not by any means. For example, most of you may be familiar with the story and work of Stephen Hawking, who's had ALS and has also been a great example of the freedom of spirit and the freedom of mind to exist in the presence of great limitation. That's a path of service. Path of limitation and a path of service. Path of sacrifice and a path of service, both. So you have chosen your life in order to combine these aspects of learning and service in your own unique way. And the only way you'll know about it is through your own intuition. Nobody else is going to tell you, can tell you from the human level what's going on. But I wanted you to know that very often, as souls grow in love, they take on lives that are examples of limitation, not just for themselves, but so that some good can come for many out of it. And that limitation and that sacrifice is done out of the greatness of divine love that a soul can hold within itself, and is done by many in different degrees, different arenas of life, with the understanding that in the deepest place, we are one, and the interests of the self are not separate from the interests of all. In the deepest truth, the soul knows that and then begins to live from that place and to choose a life from that place, the life that serves all. Our prayer for ourselves and for all beings can be that all shall know their own true nature, their own true aspect as souls created by the One, that all may be able to live from the truth of their deeper being and find in that truth the way of serving all and bringing greater love and truth to the world. Amen.